I've always been captivated by the way fish both move through the water and are restricted. Originally, I never considered dams as a threat to the surrounding environment and the species that live in the blocked rivers. The only education I was exposed to demonstrated that dams produce an alternative supply of clean energy, and the reservoirs that dams create support recreation and provide a source of water for agriculture. Through research and experience, I came to realize the effect dams have on populations of migratory fish by blocking their migration back to their spawning grounds. When I discovered the impact of human development on rivers and their native species, my mind was set that dams were the largest threat to migratory fish populations. But our recent research has led me down a different path. Yes, dams present a challenge for fish who return to their original spawning ground, but currently, warming water temperatures, as a result of global warming, have become a more pressing issue for all fish populations, not just migratory fish species. This is because of the alteration of coastal habitat and the reduction of dissolved oxygen in the water.
There is no clear answer to either of these issues. Dams are necessary because they provide energy for a rapidly growing population, and there's no way to immediately stop global warming. But education is a place to start. The action that Chuck spoke to must be derived from education about the issues facing our rivers and species. Action to protect our rivers and fish will take time, and it is on the younger generation to take charge on protecting our rivers and the fish and make sure they are preserved for future generations.
This is KD&K Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Thanks for listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program today. If you just tuned in, we are listening to podcasts from students at the in the Eric Skeef's Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class at Colorado Rocky Mountain School, CRMS, here in Carbondale. So thanks so much to Sophia and John for being here and sharing your podcast with us. That was fantastic.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, go ahead and scoot up a little bit. Yeah, it's such a great topic given where we live, right? So tell us a little bit. I know it was kind of in the story, but tell us what prompted you guys to choose this topic.
I've always grown up surrounded by water, and fishing has been a big part of kind of my family and what we kind of do as activities, and I've always been captivated by how fish, kind of how their populations thrive in the community that we live in. And so I was interested in to see how it has been affected lately.
So. Okay, and John?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I've been fishing most of my life, and I kayak on rivers, so I feel like I have a connection with rivers, so I just really wanted to see how we can keep them healthy and thriving.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you guys had a wealth of knowledge going in, given your background. So how has this process of creating this podcast helped with your ideas about the migratory fish population, or how has it changed or evolved, or has it?
I think, personally, I kind of thought that, like, humans were... they affected like migratory fish badly, and I thought that like they were only affecting them badly, but then towards the end of the podcast I learned that we are like starting to help them by like making new technology that like allows fish to go upstream over dams. So yeah, I learned that. So yeah,
it's great. Anything?
I think going into this project I had mainly focused on how dams affected fish populations, but it was interesting to have a new awareness of how global warming and water temperatures also have a big impact on them as well.
Right. And so given the class, like we've said before, it was a long process in the semester. What was challenging for the both of you in creating this podcast? Anything stick out?
Yeah, I think the hardest part was definitely like editing audio, because like Ethan's podcast, we had a lot of audio from our interviews, and like deciding what was like the most important part of the interview and putting it in was probably the hardest part.
I would agree with that. I'm not very tech savvy, so it is hard for me to kind of figure that whole process out. But it was interesting to learn how.
Yeah, I understand. I'm kind of the same way, but it's a really good learning skill. Now you have it. That's great. Okay, and is there anything you want to tell us that you really enjoyed about the process?
I really enjoyed learning more about the whole fish in the Roaring Fork Valley and kind of beyond, because I had I was sort of aware of the whole process after taking an environmental science class, and also my family background in with or surrounding fish and water. And I think it was just interesting to be able to talk to people who had a higher level of awareness than I did. So that was my favorite part of it.
Yeah, that was mine too.
She took your answer.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. All right. Well, before we get to the next podcast, is there anything either of you want to add or say before we sign off?
Yeah, we'd like to thank everybody that allowed us to interview them. And I'd like to give a shout out to my brother, Hayden Austin. It's his birthday today. So happy birthday, Hayden. Yeah.
Nothing, Sophia? Okay. Well, thanks, Sophia and John, for being here and for sharing your podcast. And it was a really good one. So we really appreciate it. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Andy Zenka Youth Empowerment Program here on KDNK. My name is Beth Weissong, and we will be with you for the next hour listening to two more podcasts from the CRMS Creative Nonfiction and Radio English class. Coming up next, we have Mila and Gordo giving us a story about local food. Stay tuned to KDNK.
I stepped into the walk-in fridge to grab some iced tea at my job, but was sidetracked by a box of fresh lettuce falling on my head. So, while trying to fix this, I started wondering, how did this milk crate of romaine get here? After all, I was pretty sure that Mid-States Dairy didn't send a crate of something that is essentially flavorful green and amber leaves across the country in multiple states. I work at a restaurant where we pride ourselves on serving fresh and local food to our customers. This being said, many of our staff, including me, only interact with the farmers when they come in with a crate of food. I wanted to find out more about where this food is coming from and what goes on outside of our kitchen.
While my epiphany of the importance of sustainable food did not come from lettuce falling on my head, it did hit me hard enough that it could be comparable. I grew up on a ranch my younger life and spent many of my childhood days playing in the gardens and pastures. I watched as my mom worked hard to grow vegetables for stew and apples so that we could make our annual apple crisp. That dish holds such an important place in my memory that no other dish may be compared to it. I have come to realize the reason I love that apple crisp so much is due to the fact that I was so close to my source of food. The fact that I was able to have such a connection to something as simple as it was fascinating. But still, I didn't know how expansive the web of food really is. As I got older, I became more and more aware of where my food actually came from. And it wasn't as pretty as my mom's garden. MSGs, CAFO lots, and massive operations seemed to reign in the food industry. I knew my family tried to avoid that as much as possible, but it can be challenging. While I tried to maintain habits that would result in a more sustainable diet, I found there were many obstacles. Though I encountered obstacles, they are not as prominent for me as I live in a valley full of local farmers. To find the real issues, I would have to start in my valley and then look into the bigger picture of America's food industry.
I'm Gordon Davies.
And I'm Malia Brinson.
We are seniors at the Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Carbondale, and we are here to look at where our food comes from and how it affects people. Do you remember the last meal you had? Most likely you can, but do you really know what was on your plate, where it came from, or how it was grown? These are the questions we are going to address. To find the answers, we first asked some locals in Carbondale about their thoughts on this. We ran into Rob Jansen outside of True Nature Healing Arts and Yoga Center in Carbondale. He was wearing a plaid shirt and was working on landscaping in the gardens. He gladly took a minute to speak to us.
Hi, my name is Rob, and what I see, what I feel about a sustainable agriculture, I think, you know, we all got to eat, and the closer we are to our source, the more we get to know it.
At Granetta Panini, a small covered panini wagon, we found Michaela. She is tall with a vibrant personality. She is also a CRMS alumni.
Hi, my name's Michaela, and I think sustainable agriculture is being able to continuously use the same land over many seasons without depleting the resources of the soil. Just kind of maintaining a healthy environment.
Roaming the streets of Carbondale, we were able to find a variety of different opinions on what sustainable agriculture is. Overall, it is farming in a way that understands the ecosystem services provided and honors the relationship between different species. This differs from the conventional agriculture, where it is often one species for miles and miles, controlled with inorganic chemicals. Tucked behind the polo field near Catherine's store, we stumbled across Roaring Gardens. Upon first glance, the gardens weren't visible, but as we got closer, tall sunflowers emerged, and a house stood out among them. Here we spoke to Ben Armstrong, the owner of Roaring Gardens. Ben is a kind-eyed man with a humble demeanor. When we first spoke with him, he was wearing a gray soil-stained shirt with a sun-bleached floppy hat. He politely removed his garden gloves before shaking our hands. After introducing ourselves, we took a tour of his gardens. We walked around with Ben leading. He showed us all of his seasonal crops, vegetables, and greenhouse. As we entered the large greenhouse, a wave of humid air washed over us, and the smell of soil and plants was pungent. Vines seemed to crawl up the sides, and hundreds of basil plants lined the back wall. As we wandered through, Ben handed me and Gordo some lemon cucumbers. They are small, round cucumbers with a bitter taste. He also gave us more veggies and fruit as we continued. As we finished our tour, we returned to the greenhouse. Ben seated himself in a blue hammock suspended from the rafters and swung his legs over one side.
I'm Ben Armstrong, and I work at Roaring Gardens, which is a small 3/4-acre farm with a 1,000-square-foot greenhouse. We do a CSA program, 3 seasons, and 2 farmers markets, and sell to a few restaurants.
One thing that Ben brought up is how both farmers and the community are interdependent. They both rely on one another. This is very prevalent in our small farm community as well.
Yeah, so CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it started in Japan, and the idea is to help the farmer out by getting them financial money and capital at the beginning of the season when they need to invest. So you pay a lump sum at the beginning, and then you get a box of veggies of whatever's in season at the farm every week.
Ben mentioned to us that he worked with a compostable toilet program in Bolivia that helps educate local communities on sustainable living efforts. He explained to us how the people in Bolivia do not know what organic or sustainable food meant.
Ben's outlook on the practices of sustainable farming and his work in Bolivia go hand in hand with educating the public about these issues. His insight shed light on the fact that so many people do not have access to the mere idea of sustainable food. This raised a sense of gratitude in me as we continue to another local farm in our valley.
1 week later, we visited Rock Bottom Ranch to speak with Jason Smith. Rock Bottom Ranch is a small ranch and a learning center through the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, a local nonprofit that strives to educate our valley by involving the community in its conservation efforts. Rock Bottom lays on the valley floor, alongside a slow-moving part of the Roaring Fork River outside of Basalt.
Driving to the ranch, we felt one of the phenomenons that makes farming in the Roaring Fork Valley so hard: microclimates. These are small areas in our valley that have different temperatures and therefore are suited for different crops and have varying growing seasons because of the topography and wind currents.
The first thing you notice at Rock Bottom, aside from the towering cottonwood trees, are the animals. There are pigs, sheep, goats, cattle, and of course the constant clatter of chickens as you walk up to the small ranch house. Coming past the algae-filled pond under a drooping willow, we reach the ranch house. Given that it was a Sunday, we didn't see anyone until Jason came out of his small apartment on the second level. Jason is a tall man who joined Rock Bottom Ranch a couple of years ago and is now the director there. He's a driven farmer with thick, calloused hands and worn clothes. He invited us into the kitchen inside. Here we sat down with Jason next to the humming fridges to find out what they do here.
At Rock Bottom Ranch, we're really looking at food systems and figuring out how to do those in a way that's better for our community, better for our people, better for the economics and the bottom line of different farming systems. And it's been a really interesting journey since I've been here.
After that, we went out onto the farm where we were able to experience this journey for ourselves. One of the most shocking things was the hay in this field. While at first glance we were just in a simple pasture, upon closer inspection, it was, in Jason's words, almost a bouquet of grass with, as we would learn, almost 20 different species. Here, Jason told us how they use the animals as tools to cultivate this biodiversity.
We can recognize that these animals have services that they can provide. So instead of just looking at a product, which is what the industrial system looks at, they look at food units. They're, you know, a pig to the industrial system is just a pork chop and bacon. To us, a pig is a digger, it's a cleaner, it's a sanitizer, it's those guys can move around, they can disturb soil where we want to put those pigs to work and get the benefit of their services in addition to bacon and pork chops and whatever else.
He then went to explain the individual roles that different animals play in this efficient system.
If we look at that, there's tons of energy that goes into managing land with a piece of equipment like a tractor. Or we can let the sheep do it themselves. They do a far better job, and we're creating some sort of product along the way, whether it's fiber or meat or milk. These animals are doing a service for us that we certainly recognize. Looking at the chickens, these chickens come over and they, again, are scratching through the manure. They're looking for bugs and larvae and weed seeds. And what that happens to do is that's our cleaning crew. They're sanitizing as they go. That reduces our vet bills to nothing. It is just a great environment. So it's a socially appropriate job. This is a really enjoyable job to walk around and work in rather than a chicken house with 30,000 chickens.
Jason puts all this work into cultivating the land and food, but this relationship often ends when the produce is put onto a big truck and then onto a plate. Unfortunately, many people do not understand how big of a role the relationship with food can play. To understand the effects of this relationship, we spoke to Robin Humble. Robin is a co-owner of Free Range Kitchen and Wine Bar in downtown Basalt, a restaurant that serves local food.
Robin has lived in the Valley for years and is the mother to two children who are both involved with the restaurant. Robin has an interesting perspective on how a person's relationship with food can affect their lives.
Well, I feel like I was always a fairly healthy eater, not until I was diagnosed and having hormonal breast cancer.
Robin's breast cancer was hormonal, meaning that it was caused and fed by the things that she put into her body, mainly food. After being diagnosed, she did some research and found out just how widespread the use of chemicals that can cause cancer were in the food industry. She also shared some of her thoughts on how to choose a certain farm over another.
It's because we are doing things that are contaminating food sources, contaminating water sources, contaminating the air, and it is causing cancer. And my gut feeling is the smaller the production, the more you can trust it. The larger the production, the more they're using practices that they just can't be sustainable, they can't be humane.
Ultimately, Robin strives to mend our relationship with food by sharing her philosophy with the customers of her restaurant.
You know, again, making as educated choices as you can, starting with as, you know, whole food-based as you can, is really important.
Robin's relationship with food is defined in part by her journey with breast cancer. This experience and the choices that she was forced to make about what she was putting into her body, which helped her during treatment, is an experience that changed her outlook on the food that we eat. While they may not be as profound or life-altering as a journey through breast cancer, everyone has moments that will affect their relationship with the food that we eat. One of these moments for me and Malia was on our most recent fall trip. Fall trip is an opportunity that we have to go into the backcountry for a week with a group of our peers. We ventured into the pristine Hunter Frying Pan wilderness with nothing but a backpack full of gear and a fly rod, learning how to fly fish and moving from lake to lake, eventually killing, cleaning, cooking, and eating some of the fish that we caught.
On our trip, we were able to form a relationship with our food in a way that made us conscious of our eating habits. Nothing really compares to eating the food we have harvested on our own. It was the fourth day of our trip, and we had spent the cold morning fishing for brook trout in the blue waters of Josephine Lake. As we caught the fish, it was our job to kill them, as we would use them for fish tacos later. Gordo and I fished next to each other, and as he pulled in a fish, I would take the hook out, and we would assess if the fish was actually big enough to kill. We were limited to 3 fish each so that we would not deplete the lake of its natural trout population.
Let me preface this by saying that neither Malia or I are vegetarians, but we are also not the killing type. After a morning of fishing, but not catching any fish big enough to keep, it began to snow. I was sitting on the slack line that had been carried in, tying a new fly onto my line for what seemed like the 100th time, when another student pulled in a good-sized fish. He didn't want to kill it, but we knew that we had to keep it to have enough food for dinner. So, I decided to do it. My hands were freezing as I tried to end its life. Tried being the operative word here, as I wouldn't wish what I did to that fish on anyone. Luke eventually stepped in to help. Even though I was terrible at actually killing something, this was eye-opening for me. It added a level of intimacy to the dining experience, knowing where the food had come from and being with it every part of the way. I think that most of the time when people are looking for the best food in a supermarket, this type of relationship is unattainable, but often unavoidable in our world.
After we killed enough fish, we cleaned and cooked them. We saturated the pan with butter before frying the fish, adding in the occasional jalapenos. As the fish sizzled, we added our lime and spices. Finally, after pulling the tender fish meat from the bones, we assembled our tacos. The fish, purple cabbage, and the sauce that one of our leaders made came together to make the perfect taco.
Unfortunately, this type of relationship that we cultivated over fall trip is challenging to attain, but the CRMS Garden attempts to change that by growing and donating local food to the community.
At CRMS, our garden program provides a school with fresh produce that is about as close as you can get to the source. We have groups of students who participate in seasonal harvests and horticulture work crews to plant and help prepare for the land for new crops. In more recent times, we have expanded the garden space so that we are able to grow almost triple what we had initially. By doing this, we are able to provide food to people who may not have the ability to access sustainable food. In these past weeks, Gordo and I helped Heather, the CRMS gardener, load hundreds of pounds of squash into crates so that they could be taken to the less fortunate families in our valleys, through a program called Lift Up. Lift Up is an organization that provides families in our community with food.
At the beginning of this project, I thought we were just going to be looking at the path of food, and we did, but it has evolved into so much more than that. Ben and Jason showed me all the effort they put into making their gardens and pastures the absolute best, not only for the people who consume food, but also for the ecosystem where this food is growing. Robin demonstrated how greatly food can affect people. All of these perspectives came from people with different relationships to their food, but the similarity is that they had a relationship with their food, unlike so many of us. Having a more meaningful and personal relationship with food and the journey that it has gone through is something that has the power to truly lead a person down a more fulfilling journey.
Growing up in a small town filled with local farmers and ranchers has made me more inclined to eat the food derived from that community. I remember on Wednesdays during the summer, walking around the local farmers market with my mom, looking for the perfect peaches and talking to the people who grew them. I consider myself very lucky to have access to this type of food. Talking with Jason and Ben about the importance of a community surrounding this food has helped fuel my incentive to eat the produce they worked so hard to provide. I have learned that it all comes full circle, and my actions will eventually affect something bigger. With new gained insight from the farmers we've visited, I have a new perspective on the food I eat. It is so important for us to be conscious of our habits and eventually try and change them for the better. And this process is an easy path for me, but for many, it is not. Many people do not have this access, and that is why the important thing now is to educate as many people as possible on sustainable practices. It will better them, and eventually it will better their community as well.
Our intent for this podcast was to share our experiences over the past semester, what we have learned, and to provoke some thought in all of you.
Thank you for listening, and hopefully to have some thoughts provoked in you, you won't have to have a box of lettuce fall on your head.
If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program on KDNK. And wow, guys, that was a really, really great podcast. We heard from Malia. Sorry.
It's all right.
Malia and Gordo about local food. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was great. Such an ending, such an important piece there right at the end.
Yes.
So tell us, what did you learn through this process of creating that story about local food? You talked to a lot of people here in the community. What did you guys learn?
Something I feel like we learned is how everybody, we're all eating the same food pretty much, and we all do the same things to get that food. But there's differences in the way that it's grown, and everybody has a different relationship, and how that affects people can change drastically based on their experiences, which is something that I thought was really powerful.
Yeah, I have to agree with Gordo on that. Seeing how our actions, like just by eating in a small local community their food, it really does impact the way they grow it, the way they are able to produce it. Because if we continue to eat their food, they're able to continue to produce it for us. And so that kind of, it all comes full circle, really, and how Ben Armstrong mentioned that we really are an interdependent community of local farmers and the people who eat the food. So just continue to eat locally and support your local farms and ranchers.
Yeah, such an important lesson, right? So both of you, clearly your relationship with food has changed through this, or do mm-hmm. you? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, and so when creating this podcast, did you have any challenges arise?
Something that was slightly challenging was everybody who we talked to had such diverse opinions, and you could go down so many paths with them, and trying to stay focused on our topic and make sure that the parts that we were playing for you all really focused on that was something that I found was challenging.
Yeah, I also found that it was, we started out with a rather broad topic, was just the sustainable efforts of food. And I think that was a little bit too broad, and we weren't able to kind of specify how it would affect us or affect our community. So we decided to kind of delve into the idea of our local community farms and how we affect that and how other people affect it as well, and how what we can do to help other people who maybe don't have access to local food, like what we can do to help them or inform them and just educate people on this topic.
So it sounds like you, through your learning, you want to do more.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Any ideas come to mind other than educating people?
Well, I think education is a really big part of it. Just Ben mentioned to us when he went to Bolivia that a lot of people didn't know like the mere idea of sustainable food, organic food. And I think just having that idea in people's mind that it is important to be close to your source of food, I think that's a good thing to kind of spark an incentive in people to eat locally and to eat healthier food. Because a lot of America, you know, they're getting their food from like a corner store or something in a big city, and they really don't have that access like we've been talking about. And I think it would be important to kind of broaden that access to sustainable food and not have it just be from large consumers and markets and huge stores.
I think along those same lines, kind of keeping this project in mind, and I feel like it's way too easy to do something and then forget about it the next week, but just keeping that with me moving forward and always thinking about it is something that I have the power to change, like my life, even if that's not affecting others, it's still a change that we can make.
Right, because you have to eat every day.
Yep.
Well, so this long process of creating this semester-long podcast, how was creating this different than you imagined back in August when Mr. Skeef presented the assignment?
It was much more kind of hands-on and experiential than I had imagined. And with two of our interviews and then working with Heather in our own garden, we were always, for a couple weekends in a row, we were going out and we were visiting these farms and seeing how the farmers act on them. And it's something that was kind of a new lens for me to look at this through, and it was really interesting.
Right.
Yeah, I also agree with Gordo. It was very hands-on from the start. Like one of the first days, Eric kind of just threw us out into the streets and had us kind of go up to random people and ask their opinions about our topic. And throughout this entire, in the beginning, I thought that it would be a little bit harder to talk to people and a little bit harder to get answers from people, but it was so easy. Everyone here is really easy to talk to, especially the farmers, because they're so passionate about spreading that idea of local farming and their produce as well. So it was good to talk to them.
Yeah. Well, you guys sound certainly very passionate about the topic now too. So is there anything else you want the listeners to know before we sign off and listen to the last podcast this afternoon?
I'd just like to thank all of the people who worked with us on this project. And it's something that's super simple, I think, that we, for people to just keep in their minds, and it really does make a change.
Yeah, I think just keeping that idea in your mind, like Gordo said, and really trying to support as much as you can, not just local farms, but local businesses as well, as we are a very small community. It all comes full circle, and it's very important to support those local people who could be your neighbors or friends and who are supporting you as well.
Wow. Well, great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been listening to Malia and Gordo about their local food podcast. Thanks so much. And now we will hear one final podcast from Dawson and...